Well, it's great to be with you again. See, look out there. See a lot of current or former MBI students. You must be gluttons for punishment. Come and listen to me again. I don't have anything new to tell you, so you probably have heard it already. You know, it's kind of interesting when you think about life and where we stand. As I travel, I find that there's so many people that don't have hope. Even though they have Christ, they tell me they don't have hope. And the people without Christ don't have hope. And hope is very important. Without hope, you end up in despair. And I can't help but think back. You remember that ad years ago where the older lady was trying to find the beef? You know, where's the beef? Am I doing that? Am I doing something wrong? I'm not supposed to do that. Is this too close? All right. Thank you. All right. Got the signal. All right. I'm going to try and behave. I won't move. And she said, you know, is that, am I really doing something wrong? All right. Let's fix it. Nah, that's not good. How's that? Bad? Should I grab a mic? All right. We're on. Where's the beef?
This red one?
Hello, hello. Okay. Thank you. Sorry for that. You know, the lady would look at the burger and go, where's the beef? You know, look at it. And sometimes when I look at believers and they're coming to talk to me, I feel like saying that to them. Where's the peace? Where's the joy? You know, you look at, got a little bit there. That's not enough. Why would you eat that? Now that's worthless, whatever you're eating. You see, the real thing is, if you really know Jesus and you're really in his family, it ought to show. And if it's not showing, you got to ask why. I know that sounds like really profound, but it's not that difficult to realize. Some of you that are here, no doubt, if I say things, it may not make sense to you, because really, in order for any of this to make sense, you have to get to where we were last week, where you understand that the only thing you can bring to God is your need. Christianity isn't really about heaven and hell. It's about a repaired relationship with God. It's about God being your father. It's about being in a family. And if you've never gotten there, you're never going to understand that. And so you don't have the hope that comes from having a father like I have a father. You see, I got a father. And this father can take care of everything. And he knows what he's doing, and he loves me. And because of my relationship with God, I have hope. It's interesting that this verse that's up on the screen, therefore encourage one another with these words. When you see that kind of Bible verse, you want to go and read the context. Let me read the context. Let me read where that's from. That's 1 Thessalonians 4:16. It says, for the Lord himself will descend from heaven with a cry of command, with the voice of an archangel, and with the sound of the trumpet of God. And the dead in Christ will rise first. Then we who are alive, who are left, will be caught up together with them in the clouds to meet the Lord in the air. And so we will always be with the Lord. Therefore, encourage one another with these words. Did you hear what's being said there? Encourage one another with the idea that one day you'll always be with God. One day you will see God face to face. Those of you in this room that get it, that you're going, yes, that's good. Those of you that don't go, I don't know if I'm really excited about that. See, I'm not sure. I'm really excited about the day when Jesus comes back, this whole planet is gone, and basically I have to be with God the rest of my life, and I'm talking to somebody who actually knows what he's talking about, and I have to give accountability. I'm not really excited about that. Others are saying, I'm really excited about that. See, there's a difference. And what is the difference? You know, I was trying to find places where I could find hope without God, and I didn't find too many places. It's kind of interesting when you understand the basics, you begin to realize that there's people that give you false hope. And I looked up the idea of false hope, and it's basically hope that is around a fantasy. When you hope that something happens, but you know it won't. But you stay hoping anyway. See, that's where it's false hope. And before you know it, there's despair that follows that one. Napoleon Bonaparte said this: a leader is a dealer in hope. That's what they are. A leader is a dealer in hope. Our current president used to have a campaign slogan that had hope and change in it. The problem, again, Democrat, Republican, don't pin me with anything. I'm just saying, you get a world leader get up there and say, I want to give you hope. What's it based on? What is the hope? It's easy to use the word, but what's it based on? I know. The philosophers of our day, Miley Cyrus and Cher, have sung this song. I'm going to read you the words of it. These clouds aren't going nowhere, baby. Rain keeps coming down. I just thought I'd try to call you, baby, for you got too far out of town. And I hope that you get this message that I'm leaving for you, because I hate that you left without hearing the words that I need you to. And I hope you find it, what you're looking for, and I hope it's everything you dreamed. There's a lot of hope here. Your life could be, and so much more, and I hope you're happy wherever you are. I wanted you to know, and nothing's going to change that, and I hope you find it. Am I supposed to hang around and wait forever? Last words that I said. But that was nothing but a broken heart talking, baby. You know that wasn't what I meant. Call me up. Let me know that you got this message. I'm leaving you because I hate that you left without hearing the words I need to say. And I hope you find it, what you're looking for. And I hope, you know, she goes on, I hope you find it. What? Find what? You see, the problem is, without God, what are you dealing hope with or for? Or what is hope? I'm telling you, this is a crisis in our nation today. It's interesting that the hope pregnancy people are here today. It's coincidental that I'm using that word. But in our nation today, we are a people who have begun to lose hope in our nation. We have begun to lose hope in our churches. We have begun to lose hope in our families. Where can we find it again? Because without it, we will be a society that will degenerate very quickly. We need to have hope, but it needs to be based on something that's real. In 1 Peter 1, Peter says, therefore, prepare your minds for action. You know, after you're a child of God, what Peter does is he tells you, you know, the next thing you need to do is prepare yourself. You know, before they go into war, by the way, the leaders in the war effort will get together and they will determine the injuries that they will sustain. They know them. If they're going to go on this campaign, they're going to lose this many people. And I would hate that job. I would hate knowing that we have to go into war and we're going to go into this country, we're going to go into this place, knowing that we're going to come out with less than we went in. But the truth of the matter is that you and I are in a spiritual war. And what we need to do is prepare our minds, because this spiritual war is fought on a certain plateau. It is fought in a certain way. And if we're not going to fight it the way it needs to be fought, then we're going to be in big trouble. Because really, what we want is the enemy to stay in the dark. We want the enemy not to know how if I'm going after somebody, I don't want them to know what I'm doing, where I'm going, how I'm doing. I want it all to be a surprise. They're easier to beat then. See, what I'm doing is laying it out for you. Basically, Satan is a peddler of false hope. That's what he does. He gets us to believe in a fantasy world. In fact, our whole nation is that way. More people in our country don't live in reality than live in reality. I mean, take a look at it. Television and movies and et cetera, the hours and hours. We all know that television's pretend, right? If I ask somebody who's young to give me a story about something, 9 out of 10 times they'll have to quote a movie or, and I'm sitting there going, did you have a life? Did you ever do anything? Was there anything that's like real in your life? Or do you have to get all of your illustrations from the pretend world? You see, there are real things going on in the world. And there are real things today in the heavens and on earth. There are real things that are happening. What's interesting is Peter says, therefore prepare your minds for action. Be sober-minded. Set your hope fully on the grace that will be brought to you at the revelation of Jesus Christ. Set your hope fully on something. You know, throughout the Bible, we're told there is hope. I have great hope, by the way. You know, I am a driven man, if you can't figure that out by now, but I have hope. I'm going somewhere. And it isn't false. It's gonna prove itself one day. And what's interesting here is that Peter says, I want you to do something. I want you to set your hope fully on the grace that will be brought to you. Wow. You know, it's interesting. Jesus, in John chapter 17, when he had spoken these words, he lifted his eyes to heaven and said, Father, the hour has come. Glorify your Son, that the Son may glorify you. Interesting. He's about to go a very tough road here, but he never lost his hope. You know, some people think that in order for you to have hope, you got to have circumstances that work out just right for you. You got to have comfort, you got to have ease, you got to have money, that's what you have your hope in. Try it, see how it works. You will never find hope in money. You will never find hope in clothing or popularity. You will never find hope in comfort. You won't find hope there. Those are false dealers of hope. See, what's interesting is there is hope available. It's just not there. There's a positional truth. In John 1, and I want to talk about position for a minute, he came to his own, and his own people did not receive him. But to all who did receive him, who believed in his name, he gave the right to become children of God. See, last week we talked about what made you qualified to be a child of God. And what makes you qualified is your need, that's it, and God's mercy. And because of that, you can be a child of God, because God is rich in mercy, and you can be in his family. So what happens then is, after you come to the understanding that you're sinful and you have a need and you come into God's family, you now have a position. Your position that you didn't have before is now you are a child of the king. You weren't a child of the king before, but now you're a child of the king. That's a different position. You know, when I eventually was able to take over the leadership at camp, the only reason I was able to do that was because my dad was in charge. There were a lot of other people that could have been more qualified, they could have done a better job, I understand all that, but they weren't my father's son. I was. So I had a privileged position. And you say, I don't like that, I'm a fair person. Doesn't matter. I have a privileged position. I am the son of the founder. I was his friend. I listened to him, and when it came time for him to hand off the ministry, he handed it to me. And whether you like that or not, it doesn't really matter. What matters is the fact that I had a position in life that I did not earn, that I did not ask for, but that I used well when it was given to me. Therefore, my father handed it to me. Now, I could have squelched that position. I could have been, you know, running around, doing things, being rebellious, doing whatever. And my dad would have looked at me one day and said, sorry, man, this is not getting handed to you. It wouldn't have affected my position whatsoever. I was still his son. But what would it have affected was my life and what happened in my life. See, that's the important thing to see. The position we have is our position. It is ours to have. However, we have responsibilities within the position. And if we want to squelch those responsibilities, what will happen is we will never, ever lose the position, but we will lose the hope that comes with it. Because there is no hope apart from doing it God's way. It's interesting when you look at it. He says that we're supposed to set our hope on the grace of God. Not too many people really understand grace. Remember, mercy and grace. Last week we talked about mercy. Today we're talking about grace. Remember, mercy is not getting what you deserve. If Ivan back there comes up, sorry, Ivan, I still pick on you. You're gone for a while, but if Ivan comes and punches me and the police saw it, he should be taken to jail, as far as I'm concerned. However, because of my mercy, I tell the police not to arrest him. Grace is then I say, Ivan, come here, and I pull out my wallet, I give him $100 and say, take Lisa out to dinner, you know, a real nice one. See, mercy is, don't go to jail. Grace is, why don't you go out to eat, I'll pay. See, it's given him more than he ever would deserve. Not just not what he deserved, but more than he deserved. See, I was Richard Wager's son. I got more than I deserved. Why? Because I was his son. Wow. You know what I hope? I hope I live up to that expectation. I take it pretty seriously. Those who know me, I take very seriously what he left me, what he entrusted me with. Why? Because I'm his son. See, the position means something. For the grace of God has appeared, bringing salvation to all people. This grace that allows us to be in God's family does something. What does it do? It trains us to renounce ungodliness and worldly passions. You see, before we were told, set your hope fully on the grace. What grace? This grace that brought salvation. Because if you begin to understand grace, you realize that grace has nothing to do as a license for sin. It has to do with a position of sonhood or daughterhood or whatever the word would be. What is that word? Daughtership? I don't know. Forget it. It has to do with being in God's family. See, we can wiggle out anything, but just change what we're going with it, the words. As a child of God, I'm a son of his. And as I respond to him, my Father bestows upon me things that I can never have any other way. And he wishes to. That's the funny part. He wants to. He wants to give me things. He wants to take care of me. He wants to be involved in my life. I just got to live so that he'll do it. You see, it's very interesting. The grace of God appeared, bringing salvation to all people. It trains us. This grace trains us to renounce ungodliness and worldly passions and to live self-controlled, upright, and godly lives in this present age while waiting for our blessed hope and appearing of the glory of our God and Savior, Jesus Christ. See, what's really interesting there is that this verse talks about all three aspects of salvation. And if you do not understand the three aspects of salvation, you are in big trouble, because there are three aspects of our salvation, three aspects of being in God's family. There's a past and a present and a future. And Titus 2:11 through 13 gives all three of those to us. See, the past aspect of our salvation is this. We are actually free from the penalty of sin because of what Jesus did, and because I am a child of God, because God is rich in mercy, I am free from the penalty of sin. See, that's past. And I have been sinful, and I am sinful, and God has forgiven me. It is all about God and his mercy. It is not about Dave and his goodness. See, that is my need thing. I am totally forgiven, past. Some of you are dragging your past sins right into life with you. You're not being one who wants to be used of God. The past is haunting you. Cut it loose. God has forgiven you if you're a believer. If you are not a believer, then your past is still a problem. Because then you'll pay for it. You'll pay for it here on earth, and you'll pay for it for eternity. But those of us that have God as our Father, my past is not a problem. Because he has forgiven it. And that's his mercy. It's not because I'm a good guy, by the way. I already just went over that. If you weren't here last week, go listen to it. It's posted online with the church stuff. But you need to understand what makes you acceptable to God. There's a present aspect of salvation. That's freedom from the very power of sin. This is the aspect that most Christians don't find, and this is where the hope comes from. See, the truth of the matter is that we live in a sinful, fallen world. And this sinful, fallen world is going to take us down. And as it takes us down, we don't think we have any power to go against it. We think we're powerless. We can't do anything about it. Yes, you can. You now have the power of God living within you. You now can go and talk to God. You now know the truth between right and wrong, and you can live right. See, now in our lives, the Bible tells us, and I challenge you to go read it and look it up, that Jesus came and died to give us life. It doesn't say he died to give us eternal life. It says life. See, it's very interesting. We somehow have only worked on the first and the third here. The future aspect of salvation is freedom from the very presence of sin. If you are a believer, one day you will die and you will be with God, and there will be no more sin, and all this death stuff, and all the stuff that's caused by sin, and all the hopelessness, and all that garbage will be gone. See, one day we'll be free from that. So the salvation that we enjoy has three aspects. The past, free from the penalty of sin. I will never, ever, ever be charged with the past sins in my life, never. And it has a future where one day I can look forward to not being in the very presence of sin anymore, and this death thing that separated our family, because my mom and dad aren't here. I don't have to deal with that anymore. It'll be gone, over. See, and most of us sit in church saying that's what we rejoice in, the past and the future. And we think Christianity is about the past and the future. We forget it's about today, too. See, Jesus came to show us that. In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. See, in the beginning there was this concept of God, but a little later in the chapter, that concept became flesh and dwelt among us so we could behold the glory of God. See, Jesus came to show us how to live and how to die. There's not two aspects of salvation, there are three. And if you're only enjoying one or two of them, then you're not enjoying what God gives you. The hope comes when you put all three of them together. 1 Peter 1:14, as obedient children, do not be conformed to the passions of your former ignorance. You see, as a child, as one with a position, God looks at me and says, why in the world don't you live as a child of the king? What in the world do you keep looking at those people who don't have the king and live like them for? Why? See, I mean, that's a good question. When my father, who loves me and knows the future, can control all things, can take care of all things, when he is in my life, why do I go to those who don't have the answers and try and figure out the answers? Why in the world do I allow the influences of people who don't have a clue and don't have hope to influence my life? Well, we do it all the time. You know, basically, probably in your life you have more influence from somewhere other than God than you do God. You spend more hours with inputs somewhere else. When God's sitting there going, look, I made all of life. And see, don't lose perspective here. We start off saying, what do those people know that are looking forward to the time they're going to be with God? Well, what they know is basically that there's these two realms. There's the realm without God, and that's a hopeless. The fruit of that is despair. The fruit of that is depression. The fruit of that, you name it, the fruit of that is there. And then there's those that have hope, those who are in the family, those who have a position, those who live as if they have a position. See, there's two realms. You know, a lot of times we just don't know it. It reminds me of a story of the bald eagle that was found by a farmer, and he didn't know what to do with the bald eagle, never really raised one. So he threw it in with the chickens. And this little bald eagle grew up with the chickens. And that bald eagle looked just like a chicken. Well, except for the bald eagle part. He looked like a chicken by actions, but not by looks. And he'd be scratching and eating corn and doing everything chickens do. And one day a friend of his came by that was a science guy. It wasn't Bill Nye the science guy, but it was some other guy. And he came by and he said, that's a eagle. Why is he with the chickens? Oh, no, he just looks like an eagle. He's really a chicken. He thinks he's a chicken. And the science guy said, no, he's an eagle. He's not a chicken. Oh, I know physically he's a chicken, an eagle, but no. He said, do you mind if I do something? No. So he grabbed the eagle, and he went up on the side of a mountain with him. And he waited the next day. He did it the next day. He wasn't standing there for days. And he put that eagle's face right towards the sun. And when that sun came up, he said, eagle, you are an eagle. You were not meant to be with those chickens. And he threw him towards that sun and said, fly. And that eagle took off. For the first time in its life, it understood what it was to be free. You see, before that, it was scratching around chickens thinking, it's pretty good life, pretty good life. Got corn here, got good. Good. Until somebody came along and said, what are you doing? Can you imagine if you were the eagle? Everything's cool. I'm enjoying my buddies. We're fine. Your potential is like zero here. Oh, you're very insensitive. No, I happen to know that you're an eagle. Oh, you don't understand. I think you just insulted my chicken friends. No, they're chickens. They need to act like chickens. But why do you as an eagle want to act like a chicken? There are people that are not positionally with Jesus. Why in the world would you want to act like them? Why? They have no hope. They have no future. You see, Peter says, as obedient children, don't conform to the passions of your former ignorance. Don't do that. You will not find what you're looking for there. And the 15th verse says, But as he who called you is holy, you be holy in all your conduct. You be holy in all your conduct. Not just here, not just all your conduct. What does holy mean? Well, theologically, we'd say it means set apart. You be, okay, we could use that. You're set apart in all of your conduct for a purpose. You know, none of you here are random blobs of protoplasm. God designed you, and he loves you, and he wants to set you free. What we need to grasp is the idea of what holiness is. If I were to use the word holy today, if I were to define it for people, I wouldn't define it as set apart, because that kind of puts it in a theological realm, which it is, but I would use the word unique instead. You see, God is unique, unique, unique. You can't compare anything to him. And what he tells Dave Wager as his son, as a position, as a son of his, he says, Dave, I want you to be unique too. See, as a peddler of hope, you cannot be one who lives as one without. Whoa. You think the trials in your life are there for a reason? See, we can go right into that. We can talk forever. Those of you that have gone through really hard times and you've kept your head up and you've loved your God and you know that he's in charge, you've just peddled hope. See, this isn't fake. There's a lot of people say, well, if I lived your life, I'd have hope too. Yeah, that's what happened to Job. Richest man, everything going cool, and Satan came and said, yeah, well, Job loves you because you gave him stuff. And God says, you're messed up, man. Take it away. You'll see. Because Job's a peddler of hope. He knows me, and he'll listen to me. He's not like everybody else. He's unique in all that he does. Go ahead. Take him on. You lose. Every time Satan encountered Job, he lost. Why? Because Job knew God and acted like he did. Oh, yeah, then God gave him all that stuff. You know what? If you are going to serve God because he's going to give you a lot of stuff, you're going to lose the hope, because your hope is in the stuff. Your hope needs to be in the God of the stuff. You see, right now, today, I know this. If God gives me health or takes it away, or God gives me stuff or takes it away, I know what God is. I know who he is. He's my Father who loves me. I'll be okay. That's hope. I know if you don't feel that way, then you don't know God. You've been believing Oprah or something. Sorry, I didn't do a Duck Dynasty thing this week. That's why some of you came back, I know. I didn't have one. But as he who called you is holy, you be holy in all you do. Beloved, I urge you as sojourners and exiles to abstain from passions of the flesh, which wage against your soul. I have seen this over and over again. People who in their lives, they come and go, I don't know, what am I supposed to do with this desire? Step on it. I mean, we all have desires we shouldn't have. I mean, I drove in Chicago traffic. Half the time I wanted to kill the guy next to me. I didn't. Why? Because it's wrong. We'd like to admit that Christians never have those thoughts, or no, you're going to have feelings. You don't even know where they come from most of the time. I mean, think about it. Whatever your favorite color is, you know, what's your favorite color? Do you have one? Green. All right? She likes green. I don't like green. It's okay, though. We're still buddies. See, when she looks at green, she goes, ah. Right? What makes her do that? It's not like it's educated or anything. It's just there. I like orange. I go, ah, to orange. Why? I don't know. You know, I like certain foods. Don't like other foods. You know what's interesting? We don't even know where feelings come from, actually. They're just there. And how many of us let those things direct us? You can't let feelings direct you. You're going to go down a path that just will be destroyed. Not only that, you can argue about stupid things. It don't even matter then. We're going to paint the house orange. No, we're not. We're going to paint it green. It's got to stay that way. You know, it's interesting. What you have to understand is that oftentimes the passions, the physical, being focused on this life and being focused on just satisfying the urges and desires in your life, they actually wage war against your soul. That's what they do. My goodness. You know, God knows what he's talking about. And we would be wise to listen to him. Because in the end, if you want to be one who looks forward to the time where you're face to face with God, then you need to be one who positioned yourself to take advantage of the position that he offers. Because there will be many who regret life that day. Romans 8:8 says, "For those who live according to the flesh set their minds on the things of the flesh, but those who live according to the Spirit set their minds on the things of the Spirit." See, there's two realms. That's what I talked about. So if you're one who's a believer and you have the Spirit of God in you, then you ought to be thinking like a child of the King and not like a chicken. Because if you're thinking like a chicken, you may enjoy that life. You may be running around with them and enjoying it, thinking it's cool, but you've got so much more than that that God made you to do. Quit finding satisfaction in chickens. Sorry, Nathan. Put that in context. For to set the mind on the flesh, let me just slow up here because I want you to pay attention to this line. For to set the mind on the flesh is death. Those people today that are living so that they can satisfy their urges and desires today, those who have set their mind on the flesh today, they're the walking dead. There's no hope there. Because there's no hope in this flesh. Now, look, you're saying, so I can't enjoy life. Oh, yes, you can. Only if you understand the position you have. I remind you, a question I've asked my students in MBI is, did God make this world for you to enjoy? And most of them would answer yes. The answer is no. He made you to enjoy him. And then you can enjoy the world. Without that, you're not going to do it. Without that, you become a false peddler of hope. See, for to set the mind on the flesh is death, but to set the mind on the Spirit is life and peace. You hear that? It's not just about heaven and hell. To set your mind on the Spirit is life. There's something alive and about those people that love God. There's something they're doing. There's something, you know. Yeah, even if you watched the DVD on Dietrich Bonhoeffer in his last moments, and I don't even know if it's accurate, but you see a guy walking to the gallows and putting his neck through, there was something alive about him. He was doing something with his life. His life actually was significant. It actually mattered. Stephen, when he told the people what he needed to, and they stoned him, and he looks up and he sees Jesus standing at the right hand of the Father. There's something significant about this. See, they were acting in accordance with their position. Oh, you can kill me. You can take this flesh, but you can't win. I win. No, Jesus in the garden, sweat drops of blood, goes. He gets nails and thorns, carries a cross, dies. And in the process, he goes, it's finished. He might as well shouted, Satan, you're a loser. I win. And everyone that's looking at it goes, huh? How did you just win? Because I took advantage of my position as a child of the King. And I remained obedient. And in the end, the King wins. and all who do what the king says will win with him. And those people who kept focusing on false hope and on the world and what it has to offer and on all the temporary pleasures and all the urges and all the desires, see, they were so busy there, they actually messed it up. They thought when Jesus died on the cross, he lost for a moment. Oh, look what he gave up. He gave up his life. He gave up his looks. I mean, he was a very good-looking man, I guess, and now he's all bloody and everything. He gave everything up. Look at him now. And Jesus is gone. Victory is about this far away. Yeah. I never forget, I've told this story often, but when I got hurt my senior year in football, how desperately I wanted to play. And how disappointed I was I couldn't. And I stood every game on the sidelines and watched my friends fight that game. And every time they congratulated me after a game and said we won, I felt hollow and empty. Because I had nothing to do with the victory. I was no longer in that fight. I was no longer in a position to make a difference. I wanted to do anything to be in that position again. And I thought, God, there'll be a day, see, when you come and I am no longer here, and we all know that, and I need to position myself so that day when I stand before you and I see Elijah and I see Elisha and I see Abraham and I see that I am dirty, my uniform is dirty, just like theirs was. That I actually participate in the victory because the victory is secure, it is there, it will not change, and either I am going to be a part of it, that gives me hope, or I am not, there's no hope there. It's not like you can sort of have hope, kind of have hope, sort of be a Christian, kind of obedient, sort of obey. That gives you sort of hope. You see, those who set their mind on flesh is death, but to set mind on the spirit is life and peace. For the mind that is set on the flesh is hostile to God, for it does not submit to God's law. Indeed, it cannot. Those who are the flesh cannot please God. You know, Jesus reaffirms that in Matthew when he says, you can't serve God and money. You can't do it. Try. You'll be miserable. You say, wait a minute, what about work? If you don't work, you don't eat. You're to work hard every day. But you don't serve money, you serve God. And some of you, when you work every day, you're going to get paid a lot. Be generous. Some of you are not going to get paid very much. Don't complain. Either way, you'll find you're dependent on the king, not your money. You can ask those who have money who have committed suicide or those that lay in hospital beds and they have all the money in the world, but they can't get help. There is one that can help. And money doesn't affect that. I appeal to you, therefore, brothers, by the mercies of God, to present your bodies a living sacrifice, holy and acceptable to God, which is your spiritual worship. Do not be conformed to this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind, that by testing you might discern the will of God and what is good and acceptable and perfect. For by the grace given to me, I say to everyone among you not to think of himself more highly than he ought to think, but to think with sober judgment, each according to the measure of faith God has assigned. It's interesting, as I talk to you, I realize something. I get to talk to you because of my position as a child of the king. But I get to tell you what the king said. That's my job. My job is not to tell you what Dave says. My job is not to fill you with Dave-isms or figure it out. No, my job is to tell you what the king says. That's what I represent. It's interesting. Sometimes we start trusting our gifts and our talents, and God says, boy, I'll show you how fast that can go. It's not your gift I'm interested in. It's not your talent. You do know God used a donkey to speak for him, and I often wanted to train one and bring him in and have him do that because that would be very cool. And you'd probably listen to him better than me. He doesn't need Dave Wager. He wants him. God Almighty, the universe wants me to be a part of what he does. That's where the hope is. It's not in my ability. It's not in my strength. It's not in my speaking, it's in the fact that the King of Kings, the Lord of Lords, the King of the universe, the creator and sustainer of all life, wants me to be a part of what he does. That's a position that I will never lose. He will never change that. He will always want me to be a part of what he does. And if you are miserable here today, it's because you are trying to mix oil and water. You are trying to live as an eagle among chickens. You cannot sort of be dedicated to the king. You cannot be partially dedicated. You cannot be somewhat dedicated. You say, well, I'm progressing. What that means is there's certain things in your life that you're going to hang on to, and it doesn't matter. You're going to figure out a way to justify them. I'll tell you what, if that's true, God will prove you wrong. I will never prove you wrong, but God will, because I am not in a position to do that. I am just in a position to tell you what he says. It's for by grace given to him that he was able to talk. Where's the hope? In your personal life, where's the hope? You hope you live long enough to retire. You hope you have enough money. You hope the business does well. You hope your family doesn't nuclear or explode. You need to set your hope where it belongs. 1 Thessalonians 4, for the Lord himself will descend from heaven with a cry of command and with the voice of the archangel and with the sound of the trumpet of God. Look, that's going to be a big deal, by the way. And the dead in Christ will rise first. Then we who are alive or left will be caught up together with them in the clouds to meet the Lord in the air. And so we will always be with the Lord. Therefore, encourage one another with these words. If you're here this morning and you're not encouraged by the fact that one day when you're not here anymore, you're going to face God face to face, and you can't play any shenanigans, you won't be able to spin it, you won't be able to talk any other way, but you've been trusting hope in the wrong thing, and it's your fantasy world that you've built, but you're not really sure. It's kind of interesting when I talk to somebody who says, man, I don't know that anyone can be sure, and I look at them and go, oh man, I feel sorry for you. You can be sure. You can know that you're a child of the king. If you don't know that, when the elders come up here at the end today, I really want to challenge you to come and tell them, I'm just not sure that I'm a child of the king. And talk through it with them. That's where it starts. If you are a child of the king, then maybe what you got to do is say, you know what, I am a child of the king, but for some reason, I have settled for being with chickens. I would venture to say that eagle was probably never really fulfilled while he was with the chickens. He just thought he was. His life was kind of full of, what do they feed chickens anyway? Whatever they feed chickens, that's what they're full of. And he found that fulfilling. And when somebody even suggested that he leave that coop, he probably fought it. He's like, what are you doing, man? Here's all my friends and my life and my, everything that's really important to me is right in this wire here, everything. And all that the scientist needed to say was, that's because you've never experienced what it could be. I am very fortunate to be a child of Richard Wager. He was a man of faith. I experienced what it was like growing up with somebody who actually loved God and walked with him. I saw what it could be. I'm even more fortunate to be a child of the king. I know what it could be. No matter what the circumstances in this life, no matter how tough they get, no matter what happens to me, I know that we will win. And that one day I have the opportunity to stand with the great faith of all time, with my uniform dirtied, and give them that nod as all of us point to God and say, look what he did. I am looking forward to the day when sin is erased, where families don't have to be separated by death, where marriages can stay together and not fall apart because all the self-centered garbage in our lives. I am looking forward to the day when God fixes the evils of sin And it's that that I get to put my hope on. And that hope is on the grace of God. That grace of God gave me my position as his child. And because I have a position, I no longer want to mingle with those chickens or be influenced by them. I guess you're in one of three categories. You're someone who's not even in God's family, and I really invite you to come and talk to an elder. Or you're in God's family, but you're with chickens. It's time for you to start having God influence your life through Bible and study and getting a small group, whatever, and turn the TV off and turn some of that other influence off. Start looking at the Son of God. Spread your wings and do some flying. And there are those of you that are flying now, and you know what I'm talking about. The view's great. The opportunities are great. And you're enjoying the very process of being a child of the King, knowing that nothing in this world, nothing can push you over. Because the King will watch out for you personally. And if it happens to you, the King is still in charge, and you will see that it will work out to your benefit in the long run. Where's your hope at? It's either being in a position of being a child of the King, or it's not. Even if it's a mix, it's not. And that's your choice and your decision. It's not that you're a victim of your environment. It's your choice. Father, thank you that we could spend time this morning together. I thank you for your mercy. You are rich in mercy. I thank you for your grace that gives us a position by which we can live victoriously. I pray that your Spirit will work mightily in this room this morning. If there are those who have still rejected about being in your family, that this would be the morning that they stop it. And that they actually respond to your love and your offer. Those that are living with chickens, Father, I pray that they renounce that and they begin to see that the influences in their lives of those who are much less than acting like they are positioned as a child of the King should not be influencing them like that. For those who soar this morning, Father, I thank you for them. I ask you to give them great strength and patience and wisdom and many opportunities to show the world who you are. As this church looks for a new pastor, I pray that you bring in the right man for the job. You know who it should be. We ask for wisdom for that committee. We ask for wisdom for the elders. In Jesus' name we pray. Amen.